This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. Phil Knight confirmed today he's going to step down as chairman of the company he founded 52 years ago this coming June. A little outfit you might have heard of called Nike. Phil Knight's new memoir about the first 15 or so years of the company's history is out this week. It's called Shoe Dog. And when we talked the other day, I asked Knight, a college runner back in the day, what it was about shoes that got him hooked.
You know, in basketball, it's about the ball itself. And running, the only equipment that really matters, at least the mentality was in those days, were the pair of shoes that you wore. And the coach that I had thought an ounce in a pair of shoes was worth 10,000 pounds in the last 10 yards of a mile. So the importance of shoes was drummed into me for several years.
Talk to me about that coach for a minute, because he was quite the figure in your life and in this book, Bill Bowerman.
Yep. He was like a second father in many ways, and a great leader and a huge role model in my life.
You formed this company with him on a handshake.
Yep.
And a little bit of lawyering, I guess, right?
Well, that followed. that I don't think it was committed to paper for about 2 years, and then it was amended about a year later, and I don't think either one of us looked at the document after that.
First year Nike's in business, which back then was called Blue Ribbon. I mean, Nike was a decade and a half off. You did like what, $8,000 worth of sales out of the back of your car, right?
That was 1964, the first year. $8,000 in sales and $234 of profit.
The thing that got me about this book, and it continues almost to the last page, like until the day you guys went public, it seemed like you were scrapping and struggling and running out of money every single day.
It was so much fun.
Well, no, it reads well, but come on. I mean, right?
No, it was every day you went to work, you knew what you did mattered. And it was you're around a lot of people you liked in a business that you liked, and it was very tense. We would go off for these offsite meetings and try and figure out how we could conquer the world in 1 hour, and the next hour we'd worry about meeting payroll on Monday.
This is a little touchy question, but I'm going to throw it out there and I'm going to see what you say. This book, you're pretty honest in this book, and I got to tell you, you do not come across as the world's greatest boss.
Oh, I'm sure a lot of people would agree with you, but I think some people would dispute it. So I don't know. I did the best I could do.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're transferring people across the country right and left. You're not responding to letters. Were you surprised that people stuck with you?
Not really. Basically, the bonds were really strong, and the people, I didn't make them go across the country. They ultimately decided they would do that, and we had a mission. And for a guy to move from Portland, Oregon to New Hampshire, well, of course, that's what was needed, or even later on to Germany.
There's a Fortune magazine article from 1984 that talking about you, and it says this: there is no better example that Nike has lost its way than they paid $250,000 for a North Carolina basketball player. The Nike Jordan brand goes on to make like $2 billion-something. What did you see that nobody else did?
Well, we knew he was a great player and an exciting player and had a lot of heart. Say that we knew he was going to be as great as he was would be a lie.
Could you have done it without celebrity endorsements, actually, now that we're on Michael Jordan and Tiger and all the rest?
Well, I think that's part of the business. I think if nobody has celebrity endorsements, we'd have been fine. But if we wouldn't have had celebrity endorsements and other people do, I don't think we could have made it, no.
Yeah. The stripe on the side of the shoe. Tell me that story.
Well, when we changed from Tiger to Nike, we had to have a design for the shoe. And, who do you go to? There's no, dial 911 for design.
Especially not in 1975 or whatever.
So we basically, I'd been introduced to, or I introduced myself, I guess, to a graphic arts student at Portland State when I was teaching there. So we went through a process, and she came up with several ideas, and we went back and forth over the course of a couple, 3 weeks, and came up with what is now known as the swoosh.
And she got, what, like $35 and a couple of hundred shares of stock once you guys went public, right?
She got, she's paid $2 an hour, which seemed to be the going rate for a struggling art student at Portland State, which amounted to $35 at the time. When we went public, we gave her 500 shares of stock, which she has held on to this day, and it's worth about $1 million.
When you travel today and you see the swoosh and you see a Nike town or whatever it is, do you still get that feeling in you?
I do. I do. I still look at people's feet, and I get a thrill seeing it in unexpected places particularly. Mm-hmm. I know when the Berlin Wall went down, and I walked across into what used to be East Berlin and saw two big Nike banners. That gave me a chill.
This is now a, what, $30 billion company. It's got 50-something thousand people working for you. What's the biggest thing you've done, do you think?
Well, I think the company itself, that Nike dwarfs anything else I've ever done. And I'm real proud of it. I think a businessman can be an artist just as much as a writer or a sculptor. And so I'm real proud of what the company's become.
Phil Knight is the co-founder and still the chairman of the board
Yep.
of Nike. Mr. Knight, thanks very much for your time, sir.
Thank you.